I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. 50 years ago, a protest of thousands of students in Mexico City ended with military tanks on the streets and hundreds dead. The Mexican government only recently recognized that on the night of October 2, 1968, it ordered the killings of students. For the first time since the massacre, a government official called it a crime of the state. As the Texas Standard's Joy Diaz reports, that recognition is by no means an apology, but it's a step that may help survivors begin the healing process.
There's a phrase, a kind of mantra, René Ortiz Muñiz knows well because it's been whispered by survivors of the student massacre since 1968.
We will never forget October 2nd. It's our fight. It's our struggle.
But half a century has gone by, and during all those years, those whispers have never led to an open conversation about the killings. In 1968, Yolanda Gil Baeza was just 17. Now she's 67, and she says her friends who protested are now either getting up in years or have already passed away. The people in government at the time were even older. Most of them are also gone. That's why Gil Baeza says it's insulting that it took so long for the government to get this conversation started.
It's a shame because after 50 years, you can't punish anyone.
So this is where things are now. But what was then? What led to the killings? 1968, as you may know, and as René Ortiz Muñiz remembers, was a year of drastic changes and unrest.
Yes, that's true. There was the war in Vietnam, marches, protests, the hippie movement, Bob Dylan, the Black Panthers, the adoption of Asian religions.
There was also unrest in Paris, in Argentina, and in Japan. In the U.S., Americans experienced the assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr. and Bobby Kennedy. In Mexico, Yolanda Gil Baeza remembers the excitement about the Olympic Games that were about to start on October 12th. But she also remembers anxiety on the part of government officials. If I were to tell you how the unrest started, Gil Baeza told me, you wouldn't believe it. She says that a couple of months before the Olympics, there was a fight at a high school in Mexico City. Apparently, the fight was over a football game. Teachers intervened to no avail, and the police got involved. When police came in, things escalated because at the time, the Mexican government was jumpy, keenly aware that the eyes of the world were on it because of the upcoming Olympic Games. Mexican officials knew the FBI was reporting back almost daily to Washington. One concern for J. Edgar Hoover's FBI was Mexico's friendly relationship with Cuba. The FBI feared Mexican students were embracing communist ideas. Remember, Che Guevara had just recently been killed in Bolivia. So when police in Mexico City couldn't stop the high school fight, the military stepped in. That resulted in the deaths of some students and the arrest of others. Soon after, students started protesting the government's heavy hand. Thousands joined in, and in a matter of weeks, there was a full-fledged movement. Every protest was met with government aggression. Gil Baeza says the students crafted a list of demands.
Primero, libertad a todos los presos políticos.
Freedom to political prisoners. Abolition of Article 145 of the Federal Penal Code. Abolition of all paramilitary groups. Removal of the top three police chiefs. Compensation to the families of those killed or injured. And the firing of the government officials responsible for the killings.
A march had been planned for the evening of October 2nd. It was meant to be a peaceful demonstration. Reporters from all over the world were in Mexico ahead of the Olympics, and students knew they were reporting on their movement. They chose a super posh neighborhood for the rally. Tlatelolco was a community of high-rises where artists and intellectuals lived. In the middle of the neighborhood was a massive open area. That's where students gathered, unaware that military tanks and soldiers were surrounding them on the ground and that military snipers sat on the buildings. Reports say a helicopter dropped flares, and that was the signal to start the killings. When the shooting stopped, hundreds were dead, and 19-year-old René Ortiz Muñiz and at least 1,000 others were arrested.
The soldiers grabbed me by the hair and they cut it off with their bayonets, just to show their power, just to show me that I was nothing, and that they could do with me whatever they wanted.
Students were tortured, others killed while in custody. Gil Baeza can't forget one image in particular, the bodies of 8 girls who were about to be part of the Olympic welcoming committee. She says they looked like broken dolls in their uniforms covered in blood. Ortiz Muñiz is about to turn 70. He's aging, but he's never forgotten. Now he's an advisor to newly elected Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. That's in part why AMLO's new government has vowed to create a commission for reconciliation. Calling the 1968 killings a crime of the state may be a first step towards that reconciliation. For Fronteras, I'm Joy Diaz.
When we come back, Día de los Muertos festivities help educate people who may not be familiar with this Mexican tradition of honoring the dead.
We hope that the tourists that walk through that have never heard about Día de los Muertos, hopefully they go away understanding a little bit more about Día de los Muertos and Day of the Dead, and that it is a celebration of life, and that they don't think that it's our Mexican Halloween.
That's next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. A number of secular, religious, and cultural holidays aggregate at this time of the year. October 31st is Halloween, the day in which spirits of the dead walk the earth, and when children of all ages dress in costumes and collect bags of snack-sized candy. November 1st is All Saints Day, which commemorates the Catholic saints. November 2nd is All Souls Day, in which prayers of the faithful are expected to cleanse the souls of those languishing in purgatory. More popularly, in Latin American communities, November 2nd is the Day of the Dead, El Día de los Muertos. Similar to Halloween, it's believed this is the day spirits of loved ones cross into the land of the living to commune with their descendants. It's a tradition said to date back to the Aztecs, who honored the goddess Mictlantecuhtli, who ruled over the afterlife in the underworld. Today, families take offerings to the graves of their ancestors that include their favorite objects or foods. And celebrants also create elaborate altars to honor their dead that also incorporate photos, food items like pan de muerto and sugar skulls, papel picado, decorative paper cutouts, and real or paper Mexican marigolds, cempasúchil, the Aztec flower of the dead. San Antonio goes big with its Día de los Muertos commemorations, from weekend-long festivals to smaller exhibits and celebrations. Belinda Menchaca is education director at the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center, which works to preserve traditional and contemporary Latino arts and culture. She spoke to us at the center's Galería Guadalupe, which is hosting an exhibit of altares and a Día de los Muertos festival with music, dance, and a remembrance procession. Menchaca says the embracing of the darkness of death is actually a celebration of life.
I think in our culture, when we think of death, there is sadness and there is pain and there is grief. But when we think of Día de los Muertos, it is our way of celebrating their life. And that's what I think sometimes people have to understand, that it is truly a celebration of the life. And so when you see, for instance, the altars that are traditional for Día de los Muertos, everything that you see on the altar is something special for that person that has passed on, whether it's their special foods that they ate, or, you know, a hobby that they had, you know, like fishing or like smoking, or their favorite drink, their favorite food. All of that is to celebrate the life that they led. Dia de los Muertos is not, it's not scary. It's not a haunted house. This is a day of celebration with music, with food, with pan de muerto, with chocolate, with community, celebrating the life of our loved ones that have passed on.
So how would you describe the difference between this holiday to maybe a child who sees more this time of year of being Halloween? This is Halloween where you dress up in costumes and you get candy. How do the traditions sort of cross each other? Because Dia de los Muertos, Halloween, All Souls, All Saints Day, they all fall around the same time of the year.
And I think that is, you know, the mistake that sometimes we fall into. I've seen propaganda promotion that says, come to our Dia de los Muertos outdoor concert and wear your favorite Halloween costume. So that, you know, unfortunately is combining two celebrations that don't have anything to do with each other. So, of course, Halloween, for a lot of us growing up, was all about getting into costume and ghoulish faces and candy and trick-or-treating. It, however, doesn't have anything to do with Dia de los Muertos. So I think it's just a part of educating. I think it's raising the awareness. I remember many years back telling somebody, we're actually preparing for Day of the Dead, for our Dia de los Muertos, and she had no idea what I was talking about. She had never heard of that, and she thought it was a little bit creepy. It was creepy that I was talking about Day of the Dead. And so when I explained to her about the celebration and how it is so important for our Mexican culture to maintain the memory of our loved ones through this tradition and how we bring their memory back to life, she actually was fascinated by it. So I think it is raising awareness about this incredible tradition, but making certain that we don't confuse the two and, for instance, wear a Halloween costume to celebrate Dia de los Muertos, or vice versa. It's a little bit disrespectful to dress as Calavera Muerto for Halloween, you know, so they shouldn't mix.
So nowadays we are seeing these giant Dia de los Muertos celebrations here in San Antonio. It's kind of hard to keep track of how many they are, and they're huge, huge community festivals. Do you feel that maybe some of the tradition gets lost when it explodes into something so large?
I think the lines are blurred a little bit. I think when you have these large celebrations and they actually have amazing creative altars that are being built, and so that tradition of the altar building, I think, is absolutely wonderful and raising the awareness about that tradition and why that is so important. I think when you mix it a little bit with a little bit more commercialization, it's just unfortunate, but I think it actually helps in preserving the tradition and in raising the awareness among a larger community. We hope that the tourists that walk through that have never heard about the Dia de los Muertos, hopefully they go away understanding a little bit more about Dia de los Muertos and Day of the Dead, and that it is a celebration of life, and that they don't think that it's our Mexican Halloween.
Well, speaking of some of the altars that you have here at the Guadalupe Galleria, walk us through visually some of these altars. We've seen some that have pictures of relatives. We see some of their favorite foods in some cases. What are some of the ones here at the gallery that stand out to you? And if you can describe one for us.
Absolutely. One of our wonderful, creative, talented altar makers, her name is Teresa Camero Solis, she actually builds an altar every year. And this year she has brought in a tree, an actual tree that she brought from her ranch. From the tree are hanging images and photographs of her family. So it's her family tree on an actual tree. But it's filled with flowers and color, papel picado, beautiful memories of her family. And it takes up an entire wall in our gallery, so it's really beautiful. Our elementary school across the street, J.T. Brack Elementary, they actually sent over exhibits from all of their different classes, I think from third, fourth, and fifth graders, images of skeletons, stories, essays about their own abuelos who have passed away or their pets that have passed away, very touching, very emotional and beautiful touches to that altar. Also, the San Antonio Eye Bank, they participate every year, and their altar is dedicated to those who have given the gift of sight.
And just to show how times have changed, just even in a generation, I was mentioning this to you when we were walking around and we saw the exhibit from the kids at J.T. Brackenridge, that Dia de los Muertos was not something that was taught to elementary school. Me, myself, I'm Hispanic, but we didn't do altares. We didn't go to the cemeteries. I'd always imagined it. This is what's happening in Mexico. The families go and they leave their offerings at the cemeteries, but it was not something that we necessarily did. And now, in just a span of just a few years, everybody knows about it. And then, of course, we have the movie Coco as well. Everybody around the world knows about the Dia de los Muertos.
You know, our teachers here at the elementary school, it is very important for them that their students maintain their heritage and their culture through their language, through their traditions. And so I think it's really wonderful that they give them the opportunity to express themselves through their activities at school about Dia de los Muertos, and for them to have conversations with their parents and with their grandparents about how the tradition was celebrated, because a lot of our families come from Mexico. So to be able to open that conversation and to be able to allow the children to ask their grandparents about how it was celebrated, and then to be able to translate it into, you know, a school activity, an arts and craft activity, I think is a wonderful opportunity for them.
Have you heard any response from maybe some of the older generations who are seeing finally interest amongst the younger generation that they're carrying on these old traditions?
I think they're very moved. It's very emotional for them when they walk through our gallery, because I think it reminds them, obviously it reminds them of their own loved ones, but it reminds them of traditions that they grew up either in their own home or in their grandparents' home. And so it is. It's very emotional for everybody, but I think especially for our older generation to be able to see this. But I think it's a sense of pride that we are paying respect and trying to preserve it as best as we can.
That's Belinda Menchaca, Education Director at the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center in San Antonio. Some Hispanics of Mexican descent have never heard of Dia de los Muertos, or they simply never cared about it when they were children. But as adults, some now appreciate the holiday for its cultural and spiritual beauty and for the potential it offers to connect them to others in their community. And the perfect place to make those connections is a Dia de los Muertos festival in downtown San Antonio. TPR's Lauren Terrazas takes us there.
Music bleeds out onto the streets, and crowds swell the alleyways of La Villita Historic Arts Village on San Antonio's Riverwalk. Among the original artwork and fresh agua frescas is the largest open altar exhibition in San Antonio. Altars at the festival honor artists like painter Bob Ross, and even famous animals like Coco, the gorilla that communicated with caretakers through sign language. One altar even pays homage to the 10 undocumented immigrants who were found dead in the back of a trailer truck in a San Antonio Walmart parking lot last summer. But the most familiar altars are the ones that honor ancestors. Irma Jimenez has designed and built altars for 20 years. She says many Hispanics have never grown up with the tradition.
They've never seen un altar de los muertos. They've never seen an ofrenda. And now they're learning this, and they all want to make one at home.
The altars, also referred to as ofrendas, are an essential part of the Dia de los Muertos celebration. Items that are most often placed on an altar include photos of deceased loved ones, candles to guide the spirits on their way back to the land of the living, and even food to share with their dearly departed. Elizabeth Pacheco's altar is hard to miss. It stands nearly 6 feet tall, with 7 layers representing each of the natural elements. She says it mirrors a more traditional altar, and every intricate detail holds significance.
You have the papel picado for the air, you have the fire, you have earth. It is also represented with my family offerings. Each one of them, as you can see, has something special that meant something to them.
The altar honors various ancestors and even her beloved bulldog. She says the dog is now fighting off evil spirits while the portal to the land of the dead remains open. Pacheco, whose face is painted to resemble an elaborate sugar skull, says she embraces the holiday from more of a cultural standpoint rather than a religious one. She finds the big public party more fulfilling because she can share the stories of her loved ones with the community, who in turn share their stories with her.
There has been hundreds of people that have walked by today, and I have shared in my family history, and I cannot even count how many people have actually shared a story with me as well. So it's been very heartfelting and rewarding to meet all these new people coming in from all over.
Many feel these big celebrations, rather than the traditionally intimate practices, provide room for them to share this part of their culture with the rest of the world. Maxwell Jimenez is enjoying the festival in Maverick Plaza with his wife and daughter. He said it reminds him of how he celebrated as a child in Mexico.
When I was a younger kid, I would celebrate Día de los Muertos at the en el Panteón, at the cemetery. That's the way, at least where I'm from, we will celebrate Día de los Muertos at the cemetery.
Once we look past the Calavera t-shirts and koozies, the Día de los Muertos Hollywood films, and even Day of the Dead-themed sporting events, Irma Jimenez says the tradition remains centered on the inevitability, but not finality, of death.
Because I tell everybody that we die three times. The first time that you die is when your heart stops beating. The second time is when they bury you. And the third one is when they forget about you. So that's why, you know, doing something like this, we're remembered. We're always remembered.
Recuérdame, aunque tengo que mirar, recuérdame.
For Fronteras, I'm Lauren Terrazas.
Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital editor is Vince Kong. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.